War Room, Impeachment. With Stephen K. Bannon, Jason Miller, and Raheem Kassam. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
Welcome to War Room Impeachment. It is Wednesday, the 4th of December, the year of our Lord, 2019. I'm Raheem Kassam, got Jason Miller here with me, the former senior communications advisor to the Trump 2016 campaign. We're broadcasting live out of the historic Breitbart Embassy on Capitol Hill, just a few blocks away from where the Democrats released their majority report into impeachment yesterday. We'll be getting to all of that on more. We are on the John Fredericks Radio Network, the Salem Broadcast Network, Newsmax, americasvoice.news. And of course, you can catch up with every show we've ever done on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, SoundCloud, YouTube, the works, and catch up with all the news that comes out of the war room we have here, heavily and effectively staffed throughout this impeachment process at www.warroom.org. I'm delighted to be joined down the line by our regular host, who's on assignment, Stephen K. Bannon, and one of our excellent repeat guests, who's also on the line, I believe, a constitutional law expert, David Rivkin, who wrote that really amazing opinion piece in the Wall Street Journal just a couple of weeks back that really set the stage for a lot of the counter-arguments and counter-narratives that the right have deployed throughout this impeachment process. I want to go to Steve and Jason and bring David in. Steve, the majority report released yesterday. I think there are some glaring and deeply contentious things in here as far as the Democrats, how they've comported themselves through this is concerned. But we also, you know, we present the facts here. We want to be clear. There probably are some things that some questions that need addressing as far as the Republicans are concerned. Steve, what, if anything, and Jason, stands out to you about this? I want to bring David in as well.
Well, look, I think it was very much laid out, and we've done this on the show. I don't see any new information here except for the situation with the phone logs. I mean, the phone logs, of Rudy and Nunez, and I don't know with the congressman how relevant that really is. But I didn't see any new information. I mean, Jason, you may have a different opinion, but I thought it was pretty straightforward. This kind of mountain out of a molehill of what they've been building up, but I didn't see any real new information in the entire 300-page package.
Jason, just tell us, I mean, this is a 300-page report. What's in, you and I have both been through this overnight. What's in this? What stands out to you? And tell us a little bit about it. How is it presented?
Yeah, and look, the latest on Presumption Gate is, as you said, Raheem, it's 300 pages. It's a lot of guesses and speculation. But what's being treated as new here, and this is why I want to get to David Rivkin, ASAP, whereas yesterday morning we had the split-screen presidency of here's President Trump at NATO versus here's Schiff and Nadler and the rest of the Democrats attacking him back here in Washington. This morning we have the split-screen presidency and the fact that you still have Schiff and Nadler on the attack, and then you have phone logs of President Trump's, whether it be staffers or lawyers or associates, which we're going to get into how they have the legal how they have the phone logs for his attorney, which is really problematic. But this whole, they're using the fact of these phone logs as if there's some damning, incriminating evidence, which is just bunk. But I really want to get into David Rivkin. Would love to get your overview, your thoughts here, both on the report, and then we'll get into what we're going to expect today.
Struggling to make that connection right now. We'll try and get back to David Rivkin very shortly. Okay, look, there are a lot of things, Jason, that stood out for me on this, and you know, I was up till about 2:30 in the morning going through this. I can't even say that I've got through all of the end notes yet, but through the majority of it, it's written very much in a story fashion, which is much different from the minority report that we saw. The minority report was fact in bullet points over and again, 123 pages, just laying out the pure facts of this thing. The interesting thing about the House majority report, Steve, as well, I want to get your thoughts on this. It's really told like a story. It has the language of a story. It has the narrative of a story. It has the chapters of a story. I think the White House referred to it as the ramblings of a basement blogger yesterday.
Which, yeah, and Stephanie's comments weren't that far off. I mean, they were pretty close to the pin. I mean, it's although it's a little bit better. I mean, it could probably get made into a Netflix special or something of that nature. Maybe not the big screen.
But it will be.
It will be. And do we have David yet?
We're trying to reconnect.
Okay. But that's, Raheem, that's the whole thing. That's what Steve opened up with, really what's new here. And the fact that the media is this morning running around the clock, and they were last night with the phone logs. Here's the fact that President Trump's attorney, Rudy Giuliani, may have spoken with him once in the White House. You know, gasp, you know, Keller Roar.
Let's just set the stage on that. For the audience that doesn't know, and there's no reason why ordinary Americans should know what's new about this, what's in the 300 pages of this. When you say the phone logs, explain to people that this is a new data dump that's contained in the back of this report that includes allegedly subpoenaed information from telephone companies of call logs between some of the major players in this. This is the government, this is the apparatus of government being used to get and release the phone logs of the opposition, political opposition, that's Devin Nunes on the Intelligence Committee, of the president's personal lawyer, of the White House, of private individuals, of journalists, and of journalist sources. And there's no furore about this?
Right. And if you seemed a little bit, if it seems confusing to be able to track, that's because it absolutely is. And so somehow we have David Rivkin. Let's go and get right into him.
Yeah, David, sorry about that. It looks like we dropped you. David Rivkin, I don't know if you caught that last mini explanation rant by me on this, on the phone logs. And we want to get your immediate thoughts on that, because that seems to be something that's curious and new in this whole saga.
Unfortunately, I did not hear that, so if you...
Yeah, absolutely. David, we're talking about the phone logs, the new information that's included in the majority report, the phone logs of the president's lawyer, journalists, their sources, how the Democrats got the information from the telephone companies. They obtained it, but they've also released it inside the report. I mean, legally, constitutionally, where do we stand on something like that?
Well, it's troubling. I mean, obviously, Congress can, the House in this case, can issue subpoenas in the context of oversight. Here, presumably, they issued in the context of an impeachment investigation. I would have, if I were the phone companies involved, I would have put a bit of a fuss over it and wanted to know what they're planning to do with this information. Just curious, when you say phone logs, is there content or just the metadata? Who called
so it's yeah.
There?
So David, it's just the records. And so what the media is trying to do is say, here are colleagues. Here's when Devin Nunes spoke with Mayor Giuliani. Here's where Devin,
for how long
and for how long. Here's when
That's metadata. Yeah. Still. Enormously troubling, and it's interesting to figure out how when was requests were made, because the impeachment inquiry has not been proceeding at warp speed.
And this has never come up before. This is the first time we've ever gotten it, David.
Well, David, it's interesting you put your finger on that, because that Adam Schiff yesterday actually went to the microphone at 3 o'clock yesterday afternoon and said, "I can't get into when and how we obtain these call records," either he said, "I can't," or "I won't." That implies that there may have been a longer process in all of this than people might think, David. Is that not right?
Yes. I would personally very much doubt that such requests could have been processed since the official commencement of the impeachment inquiry, which, of course, was really brought about technically by the House vote driven by Speaker Pelosi. Very troubling. So to put it crisply, we now have very troubling and unlawful, in my opinion, surveillance of various Trump campaign aides going back to the 2016. You remember Carter Page and some others, done by the intelligence community. And now we have very questionable surveillance in the form of obtaining phone records by the House. So both political branches seem to be equally partaking of this very dangerous practice. Why the libertarians are not troubled by this. Why folks who care about civil liberties or an American Civil Liberties Union, it used to be something that would provoke horror.
I remember
dismay,
that.
But yeah, I guess it's all cricket now if you're just trying to hurt Trump.
Well, and David, what does it say about the future of the attorney-client privilege relationship when phone logs or metadata like this are being blasted all over CNN and tried to turn into some negative speculation?
Well, good question. Well, technically speaking, of course, there's no attorney-client relationship between Rudy Giuliani and Congressman Nunes. But to the extent that there are records that provide a broader sample, shall we say, of Giuliani's conversations, including his conversations with Trump, yes, very troubling. And DOJ has all sorts of policies in place to ensure that even in the context of a criminal investigation.
David, we just hang on there. We have to take a quick break, pay some bills. Just hang on the line. We'll be right back here on War Room Impeachment after this short break.
Bannon, Miller, Kassam. War Room Impeachment
on the John Fredericks Radio Network.
Welcome back to War Room Impeachment, the 4th of December, 2019. Raheem Kassam here with Jason Miller in the historic Breitbart Embassy. We've got constitutional law expert David Rivkin joining us on the line. We're going to discuss not just what happened with the majority report release and its contents yesterday. We're also going to talk about today. It's a big, big day again. On Capitol Hill as the impeachment inquiry moves into the Judiciary Committee. Jason, I want to throw it to you and David on this.
Yeah, David, really want to set the stage today as far as what's going on with this House Judiciary hearing. We have the three Democratic lawyers, Noah Feldman, Harvard Law School professor, who's had some troubling comments about Sharia law, Stanford Law professor Pamela Carlin, who's called for further investigations, and then third witness, Michael Gerhardt, University of North Carolina Law School professor, who's already written, and I'm scanning here through Washington Examiner story from Susan Frecchio, wrote in The Atlantic that the impeachment proceedings are fully legitimate. And then on the Republican side, you have Jonathan Turley, GW law professor, who by no means is a big Trump advocate. He's said that he thinks the Democrats are going down the wrong road, don't have enough evidence. I want to get your take on what the Democrats are hoping to achieve today and what troubles are ahead of them if they can't prove some slam dunk thing against the president.
Right. Well, they failed, if you look at the majority report, failed to portray anything resembling an impeachable offense. What I expect them, and we can elaborate on that a little bit because this is really the most important point, but they hope to have the three constitutional law professors, I know at least two of them. Frankly, it's not, you know, what their opinions are about particular issues. I don't think that any constitutional lawyer can possibly provide sufficient legal arguments as to why what happened with Ukraine is a high crime and misdemeanor. I mean, Turley is going to take a skeptical view of that. They're, again, put it somewhat crudely, I think they're trying to put lipstick on the pig. They don't have either the facts or the legal architecture. And I would say, I mean, fundamentally what they're describing is the use of President's foreign affairs powers, right, to structure relations with Ukraine in a particular way, to have Ukraine investigate its past corruption. Whether you agree or disagree with this, whether you think there is legitimate basis to believe that Ukraine interfered in 2016 elections, and I think there is, doesn't mean that Russians haven't interfered. They have. Doesn't mean Ukraine hasn't. Whatever issues you might have with it, it's a perfectly legitimate exercise of President's core constitutional powers. It, by definition, cannot be a high crime and misdemeanor. And the Democrats have not advanced that ball at all. Now, even if you buy the narrative that somehow the president was seeking a personal political advantage here, my response to it is very simple, and I've written about it more than once by now for the Journal. Everything a president does in a democracy has a political dimension, okay? Everything. Whether you're pursuing nuclear arms deal with North Korea, a trade deal with China, a trade deal with Mexico and Canada, or some arrangement with Ukraine, it always has a political dimension. It doesn't in any way taint the exercise of your foreign affairs powers. So this whole exercise is crazy, and throwing words around like abusing power and, you know, seeking to investigate your political opponents are just labeling. These are not legal arguments.
And David, do you think it's sellable to the American public? First of all, the American public doesn't know who any of these four constitutional law lawyers are. I mean, even some of us who are quote unquote in the know had to look them up or try to find something about them. Do these lawyers have the credibility to go and swing some public opinion in the U.S., or could this continue to backfire on Democrats, particularly in swing districts and swing states?
I think the answer is resoundingly no. As I said, look, a lawyer is quite agile, right? The old expression, you can argue things round, you can argue things square. But some things are not capable of being argued round and square. I don't see how it's going to provide any oxygen for what is nakedly, brutally partisan exercise. You're not going to have a single Republican in the House voting for it. I mean, and look, aside from what we were talking about earlier about the phone records, look at the rhetoric in the majority report. I mean, it basically begins by accusing Trump of having won in 2016 with Russian help, which, by the way, was not only is false, but it's certainly false not even in a matter of first impression, but after the Mueller investigation. But, I mean, again, if I were advising, which I'm not, Adam Schiff, I would ask him to be at least appear to be a little bit less partisan, a little bit fairer. This whole exercise, look, we've had three presidential impeachments, right, in American history. Andrew Johnson, who was impeached by the House, acquitted by the Senate. We had Nixon, who resigned. We had Clinton impeached by the House, acquitted by the Senate. Ugly exercise is always political, but this is the ugliest, most partisan, least fair exercise with the least substance involved. And you can put 100 law professors in there, and I don't think they're going to animate this corpse. I'm sorry to be mixing my metaphors here.
David, one other question. So obviously you have a lot of fans on this show, and Matt Gaetz, who was on here on Monday, said that he wished you were one of the witnesses that were called. If you were advising Republicans today, what would you be telling them on how to approach this as opposed to how the House Intel Committee hearings went the other week?
I would advise the Republicans to be asking, you know, not only of the four constitutional law professors, but going forward, some questions that point out to how previous presidents have engaged in foreign policy exercises that were driven. And by the way, one of the things I've written about in the historical record is very clear. Lots and lots of presidents had private individuals help drive their foreign policy. Woodrow Wilson is a perfect example. FDR is a perfect example. Heck, George Washington is a perfect example. You know, the very first diplomatic accomplishment in U.S. history was called the Jay Treaty. You know who John Jay was? He's not in the private sector, but he was a Supreme Court justice. Okay, so the foreign policy was not in his remit. Kennedy's brother Robert, he was Attorney General, was negotiating with Russians during the Cuban Missile Crisis. Now, you can disagree with this as a matter of, you know, concern to the State Department mandarins whom we feel cut out during those procedures. But how is it an impeachable offense? So if I were Republicans, I would actually have a serious, erudite discussion about what happened before. I would ask questions about what was done, for example, relative to the outreach to Russia by the likes of DNC and the Hillary Clinton campaign, since I'm really sick and tired of his highfalutin rhetoric about how what Trump has tried to do is to pull Ukraine into 2020 elections. I mean, it's like people suffer from historical amnesia. I mean, how many people don't remember or forgotten names like Christopher Steele and Glenn Simpson? What was that all about? Looking for dirt on Trump and Manafort and various other people involved in the Republican side in 2016? Using foreigners? Using foreign intelligence services? I mean, I know it's all being investigated by DOJ, but I mean, it's useful to put in a little bit of a context what's going on here.
David, we're really grateful for you joining us here on War Room Impeachment. You can follow David's work at David Rivkin on Twitter. That's David Rivkin on Twitter. Thank you, David Rivkin, constitutional law expert, joining us here on War Room Impeachment. We'll be right back with very much more after this break.
War Room Impeachment. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
Welcome back to War Room Impeachment, the 4th of December 2019, episode 57, I believe we're on. How time flies. Stephen K. Bannon is up on assignment, I believe in New York somewhere. Maybe by the beach or something. I don't know. What does he like to do up there? Probably just rolling meetings all day, every day. One of Steve's very favorite things to do. We have, however, filling in, Jason Miller joining us in the historic Breitbart Embassy. Raheem Kassam, that's me. We had David Rivkin just a moment ago. Just a fantastic interview with David. And we're going to have all the pullouts from that on the site, www.warroom.org. And ladies and gentlemen, I cannot stress enough how important to us it is that you go onto your podcast platform of your choice, whether it's Google Play or iTunes or Stitcher, whatever it is, go on there, download, subscribe to War Room Impeachment. It makes the world of difference to the distribution, and it lets us know we're doing a good job if you leave us a review or two. Joining us now, the author of a fantastic opinion piece in the Wall Street Journal at the end of last month, Daniel Huff, the former counsel to House and Senate Judiciary Committees. Daniel, thank you so much for joining us here on War Room Impeachment.
Thank you very much. It's a high honor to be here discussing high crimes and misdemeanors.
or the lack thereof. Jason, want to throw it to you. What do we have for Daniel? And tell us about this great op-ed he wrote.
Yeah, absolutely. And so Daniel's op-ed, the Biden probe, Trump taxes raise similar questions. As it appeared in the Wall Street Journal, Democrats are also using legitimate powers to target a political opponent. Daniel, I want you to break this down, because one of the key central themes that we've seen during this entire impeachment hearings are the completely unfair partisan nature that the way that Democrats have been doing, have been driving their attack. And again, everything that President Trump does is wrong, but anything that Joe Biden did is not wrong. And so why don't you take us into your op-ed and why you felt the need to write this?
Yeah, so Democrats accuse the president of using the power of his office to pursue Biden. But how is that any different from them using the power of their subpoenas to dig for dirt in his tax returns? In both cases, official power is being used to dig for dirt on a political rival. Now, it turns out that the subpoena of the Democrats has been challenged in court as politically motivated. And what they've said is, well, it doesn't matter if there's a political motivation as long as we can point to some valid overarching official purpose. And what they don't seem to realize is that the same argument that they used to support their subpoena kills their impeachment inquiry. And that was really the core point of the article. So that even if everything they're setting out to show that the president, there was a quid pro quo and it was very clear, even if that's all true, it does not matter, because the Democrats are locked into the position that even if you have political motivation for something, it does not matter as long as it fits within an overarching, broader official purpose.
Well, just to jump in there, they would make the claim in response that actually this goes beyond that because there's a foreign power involved. How do we address that?
Well, let me lay out the case first, and I'll explain precisely why I don't think it makes a difference. So what happened is that starting in 2016, there was big talk of the president's not released his tax returns. The Democrats were very angry. Senator Clinton at the time wanted him to do it. It's been a political campaign issue for them since 2016. When they took power in at the beginning of 2019, they said, the subpoenas are going to fly. We're going to go after him. And sure enough, in April, you had two committees going after the IRS and his accounting firm trying to get 6 to 8 years of the president's subpoenas. And the president's tax returns and financial information. Now, to which the administration said, you have no right to these because there's no legislative purpose. And in fact, the Justice Department compiled a 33-page document meticulously showing that this was clearly politically motivated, that they were digging for dirt, hoping to find something they could use against the president in the 2020 election. To which they respond, listen, we're not going to comply with this because there's no legislative purpose. This is purely political. You're abusing your power. And the chairman of the committee that was seeking it, Chairman Neal, on the Ways and Means Committee, wrote back something that I actually want to quote because I think it's very striking. And he basically says, doesn't matter. You have no right to question us. And he says, he says that the administration may not question or second-guess the motivations of the committee regarding its need for the suggested information. You can't even ask us. We said to you, we knew that's enough.
Hit us with that again.
Well, what he said was that Richard Neal writes a letter in response to this 33-page document saying this is political movement. He writes, the administration may not question or second-guess the motivations of the committee. And it's not only him. This argument was echoed by the Oversight Committee in a court filing where they cited a Supreme Court, and they said the court has consistently noted that the motivations underlying congressional action are not to be second-guessed, even by the courts. And they went on. They said, so long as Congress acts in pursuance of its constitutional power, as long as they have some valid purpose, the judiciary lacks authority to intervene. And the important point here is that the court bought the argument. The district court upheld the subpoena, and he said, quote, as long as you have a facially valid legislative purpose, it is not for the court to question whether the committee's actions are truly motivated by political considerations. So they won on that argument. We have a valid legislative purpose. You can't look behind it. And it doesn't matter if we might have some political motivation in addition or beneath it. It's none of your business. You have no right to ask. As long as we can point to something valid, that is it. Well, okay. But President Trump is also accused of using his official power for political purposes. His defenders also point to a valid official purpose. He's trying to reduce corruption.
We got
and
a
so
quick
forth.
Break. We've got to pay some bills. We're going to be right back with more of this fascinating stuff here on War Room Impeachment.
Bannon, Miller, Kassam. War Room Impeachment
on the John Fredericks Radio Network.
If you're like me and you're thinking, wow, there's so much to cover here on War Room Impeachment, make sure you go to warroom.org after the show. We're going to have much more up there. Joined again here in studio and very honored to be joined by Daniel Huff, former counsel to House and Senate Judiciary Committees, who is explaining to us the finer points of why this case against the president isn't much of a case at all. Just want to conclude that point with you, Daniel.
Yeah, the essential point is this, that the Democrats are accusing the president of doing the very same thing that they are doing. They say he's using political official power to go after political enemies. They are, too, with their subpoenas. And when they were challenged, the defense that they offered for their subpoenas applies equally to the president. In particular, that even if there's a political motivation that one can point to in our subpoenas, it doesn't matter because it fits within a valid claimed legislative purpose. In other words, all you have to have is some kind of bare fig leaf of why you are doing something. And as long as that is an official reason, and that's somewhat plausible, it doesn't matter even if there's lots of evidence of political motivation. But my point is the same logic that supports their subpoena applies with equal force to the president, that he also can claim, yes, I was going after Biden, but that was about a broader effort to go after corruption, to have other countries contribute more to the cause. And if you think that's implausible, I think your claim that you have a legislative purpose to get my tax subpoenas is implausible. And since you can do it, I can do it. So quit all of the sanctimonious nonsense.
We have a very special guest joining us on the line, late minute addition to War Room Impeachment over the last 12 hours or so. Tom Fitton, the president of Judicial Watch, one of the great organizations out there that does so much on the legal side of things. And Tom is a real font of knowledge on this stuff. I saw his tweets on the matter yesterday. Do we have Tom Fitton on the line? Tom, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, hey, Tom. Thank you so much for joining us. I know it was relatively last minute. Tom, just to what Daniel Huff was just saying, and you know, I saw you tweeting about the call logs yesterday that have been included in this majority report, this 300-page report that came out from Adam Schiff yesterday. Real nice storybook and lots of nice references to the founders in his storybook, but something much more concerning and deeply nefarious as far as I'm concerned, Tom. What say you to how the Democrats have not just obtained from the telephone companies, but published call records of the House Minority Chairman of the Intelligence Committee, the President and the President's lawyer, journalist sources. I thought this was America, Tom. Where's the ACLU?
Yeah, you raised some good points there, Reem. I saw that, and I could not believe that these call records were obtained. I don't know how they were obtained. I don't know if it was a subpoena or a letter. Or a leak, I don't know, but we'll find out maybe today. But the idea that you had these politicians in the House go after the president's lawyer's call records without providing the president any ability to object or highlight the fact, hey, this is my lawyer, you're going after his communications, who he's calling, reflects on my representation or his representation of me, and strikes at my God-given right to have a confidential relationship with my attorney as protected by the Constitution.
And so, Tom, obviously this is unconstitutional. It's definitely, legally speaking, it's way outside of the moral boundaries. Do you think that there's also a criminal implication here? And what would this not just open up the floodgates for then, say, Senate Republicans to say, you know what, we want to find out every time that Adam Schiff or one of his committee members spoke with the whistleblower or anybody else?
Well, if there was a leak of these materials, then you could get into the issues of crimes. Of course, that's at the heart of this impeachment inquiry. It goes back to an illegal leak, in my view, of material, which was the contents of the classified phone call the president had with the president of Ukraine. It was classified at the time. The second part of your question is, I don't know what else can be done in response to this. And this is just a political game right now at these hearings. They're not substantial in terms of the Constitution, and Republicans don't have any rights or abilities or powers to go after anything at this point.
Tommy, you've been pretty clear about this. I mean, across your Twitter feed, which, by the way, is one of my favorites. It's at Tom Fitton on Twitter, about this, what you call a coup, an attack on the Republic, on the Constitution. We've got Daniel Huff in the studio with us as well, talking about perhaps the justification for a motion to dismiss this whole thing. Daniel, could you just summarize your opinion on that? I want to get Tom's response to that as well.
So the key point of my argument is that the Democrats are claiming or accusing the president of doing something that they themselves are already doing, and that for the same reason they say they can do it, meaning, offer these subpoenas.
Projection, right?
Yes, yes. But for this, and it's not just hypocrisy, though. It's like for the same reason they can do it, they can't complain about the president doing it. And therefore, all of these facts, this 300-page report, at bottom, it does not matter. Because even in the worst-case scenario, even with a quid pro quo, the president can say, listen, you think I was trying to go after Biden, you think there's strong evidence, it doesn't matter because I can situate that within a broader valid official purpose, going after corruption and trying to get other countries to help support the foreign aid. And if you think that's implausible, that's no less implausible than the Democrats claiming they want my tax returns, which they're really trying to get dirt from, but really they claim there's a valid purpose there, a legislative
using
purpose.
Government coercion.
Exactly. And yeah. So since the facts don't matter, it's ripe for a motion to dismiss, because even if everything the Democrats claim is true, it cannot rise to the level of impeachment because there's nothing unusual here. There's no, harm to the natural order. Everyone's doing it. And so I think when it goes over the Senate, what they ought to have is a motion to dismiss. Senator Byrd brought a motion to dismiss to get rid of the Clinton impeachment. It actually failed. But here I think it could work if this argument takes hold, and I think it could.
Tom, what do you think of that?
No, I don't dispute any of that. And to take it a step back further, any time the president who is running for re-election communicates with a foreign power, seeks something for the foreign government to do to the benefit of the United States, obviously that inures to the president's benefit politically, because he's seeking re-election. He wants the country to succeed, and he's doing the work as president. So when he gets foreign governments to abide by our policy or follow what our direction would be, he benefits politically from that. So under that theory, he can't communicate with any foreign leaders, because if they do anything positive in response to his communications, somehow that's interfering in the elections. It's absurd. Look, Congress is upholding or refusing, the Congress is refusing to vote on, which is their right, this Canadian-Mexican trade agreement, evidently because they're not getting certain benefits out of that package that they otherwise that they would demand. And that's political log rolling. It goes on all the time. It's not illegal. It's not unconstitutional. And the Democrats don't have anything to impeach them on. And incredibly, they're having an impeachment hearing today, and they're asking these four witnesses to come in to talk about
Tom,
an impeachment where they don't have the specifics of what they're being asked to
Tom,
talk
just
about.
Hang over the break. We'll be right back. We're going to take Tom and Daniel right after the break here on War Room Impeachment. Stay tuned.
Bannon, Miller, Kassam. War Room Impeachment
on the John Fredericks Radio Network.
Welcome back to War Room Impeachment. Jason Miller, Raheem Kassam, Daniel Huff, Tom Fitton. This is a heck of a party over here. We've a few minutes left. I want to bring Tom Fitton back in, the president of Judicial Watch, just to conclude some of the thoughts he was elaborating before I rudely cut in with commercials. Tom, do we still have you?
Yes, I'm here.
There you are.
Excellent.
Thank goodness. Tom, you were making such an interesting point. It would have been such a shame to lose you. Please conclude what you were just saying about today's Judiciary Committee hearings and the four witnesses.
Well, this is an impeachment hearing about nothing. There are no articles of impeachment, so they're being asked to comment on a conclusion that has or documents or materials that haven't been presented to the American people for consideration. We have a 300-page report that is just more of the gossip that we heard in the prior hearings. I'm calling it the Gossip Girl Report. If the Judiciary Committee is going to be holding a hearing, they should be trying to figure out how Schiff got those phone records that he was able to insert into the public record in violation of any notions of decency or constitution. That's the issue today. To have academics come in, most of whom are partisans, you have literally an Elizabeth Warren donor testifying to the Democrats less than a year before the election to impeach Donald Trump. I mean, if that doesn't tell you about the abusive political nature of this process, I don't know what will. You know, I understand all processes like this. It's an impeachment process. It's in the House. It's political. But there's got to be a modicum of concern about our republic, our Constitution, and the due process rights of the president. And none of that has been present through any of this.
Yeah, so Tom, I mean, how big of a backlash do Democrats potentially face here today by bringing in someone like Noah Feldman, who, aside from being a constitutional law expert, is also an expert on Sharia law, as well as the whole thing being quarterbacked by Norm Eisen, the former ethics czar under President Obama, along as other Obama donors and appointees, to basically bring in four supporters of the previous administration to come in and attack President Trump. What do you think the prospect for a backlash is here?
Well, they don't have the support of the American people. There's not a majority in support of impeachment. A bare majority doesn't even get you to impeachment. You need a strong public support for this. And this is why they're moving quickly, because they realize the more this percolates, the less support that there will be for it. The longer this has gone on, support is lessened. So speed is key to the coup here. And they're just trying to get this done before too many voters come back around to the accountability that I think ultimately fear. You know, my guess is their calculation is, you know, we lose the House, we lose the House. This is something worth getting the presidency over.
Tom Fitton, Judicial Watch President, thank you so much for joining us here on War Room Impeachment. We really appreciate it. Could have had you much longer, but when Stephen K. Bannon's not in the studio, they only let us do 1 hour. If he's here, we get to do two or three. Really grateful to all of you guys joining us. Daniel Huff with that great op-ed. Check it out in the Wall Street Journal. We'll be back maybe tonight with a special. Go to warroom.org in the meantime. Everything is there. We'll be back.